It won't take that long. But let's see what we can do. By way of introduction, the topic we're trying to get at a little bit is, why should we learn Gemara? The reason that it's a really good question is the people actually leaving BMP to go to IBC because they don't really enjoy learning Gemara. They tried in Eretz Yisrael for years, maybe even BMP a little bit. Also for requirements. But one of the complaints that I've received a lot is like, Gemara doesn't speak to me. It's not interesting to me. And I understand where they're coming from, and I totally hear that. So the question is, maybe they're right. If not, why not? The starting point is, I think the major starting point is, I want to learn Torah, that's for sure. But I want to learn things that make sense in terms of the priorities of my life. I only have so much time, and I'm going to have to prioritize what I want to learn and what I want to know and what takes precedence. And I think because of that, most people say, well, halacha l'maase takes precedence according to some. But according to others, it's hashkafa and machshava. And really what it goes down to, what it boils down to, is whatever people feel is most interesting to them. In terms of real priorities, if a person wants to be a good Jew, so what probably should be his priority then? Is there one that you think makes the most sense?
Musar.
Musar, why? Oh, I thought you were going to say, because if you learn Musar, you realize you have more time to learn other things. Mishnah, why?
What is it?
Mishnah Brura. That was halacha lemaisa, actual practical halacha, because then you know what to do at least. Right, so that at least makes the most sense. I think the Chafetz Chaim himself was in favor of that. He writes that in Mishnah Berurah, in one place explicitly, when he talks about learning, the way the Shulchan Aruch is organized, as we've discussed in the past, is based on your day. So the Mishnah Berurah only has comments on the section of Shulchan Aruch called Orach Chaim. Orach Chaim means the ways of life, and it's organized to wake up in the morning, put on your tzitzis, put on your tefillin, daven, and after davening, what do you do next? So it says in Shulchan Aruch, you go learn. Then the next seif in Shulchan Aruch, actually it's the next siman in Shulchan Aruch, is good work, which is also interesting. We pass not Elkar Shem and Baruchai. But that's, I guess, a gemara for another time. The whole issue of kolel and all those kinds of things. What is the ideal state of Klal Yisrael? Should everybody be just learning or working? How does working fit into all of this? So Shulchan Aruch Paskins, you go to work. But before you go to work, you're supposed to sit and learn. So over there, in that siman, Mishnah Berurah does talk about, okay, well, how much time do you have? What should you learn?
You mean like before you start a career, you should learn a few years? Or you...
Every day.
Oh, meaning every day you learn before you go to work.
Correct. Yomi, or whatever it's going to be. So Mishnah Berurah over there says, well, if you have a limited time, what should you focus on? And then he points out that one of the most important things to learn is halacha lemaisa. You have to learn practical halacha because you have to know what to do. So prioritizing, that does make a lot of sense. And then that begs the question, well then, what is the purpose, function, role of Daf Yomi in all of this? So people are learning abstractions and they're learning it very quickly and they're not really gaining a lot of information because they're also, doing it in a certain way, in a certain style, in a certain speed. So what is the point of that? So that is something that's also kedai to discuss. So the question is, how does learning Gemara fit into Talmud Torah and our responsibilities and our desires, because those are different. And that's the first introduction that I want to give, which is, there used to be a time when if someone would ask the question, why learn Gemara? I believe this actually happened historically. That an answer of, well, let's examine the halachas of Talmud Torah and see if it's obligatory and in what way. And that might be a good enough answer to a person that asked the question because he just wanted to know, I want to be a good person, a good Jew. It doesn't work anymore, I don't think. I think if you answer a person with, oh, well, let's take a look at the Rambam, we'll take a look at the halacha, Hilchos Talmud Torah, and Shulchan Aruch, let's go see how Gemara fits, should you learn Gemara or not? And the person will say, oh, I guess I'm supposed to. But I don't want it. where do you get with that? Yeah.
What's the difference between the Mishnah Berurah and the Shulchan Aruch?
The Mishnah Berurah is a commentary on the Shulchan Aruch. So the Shulchan Aruch was written way before, and several hundred years before, and then the Mishnah Berurah is a commentary on it, which incorporates other explanations since then, but perhaps more than that is trying to apply it to new scenarios and how life has changed a little bit since then and things like that. So he's considered to be a posek that's more recent than the Shulchan. So I do think it's just it's worth just considering for a minute that there certainly was a time, and I really believe this, even though we don't relate to it anymore, where people were very focused on their obligations. People were focused on obligations to their country and obligations to their families. And nowadays, I think that's a reflection of the 60s and a certain change in the philosophy of the world, that people are no longer very much focused on obligations. They're way more focused on themselves and what they want. And it leads to a lot of lack of sense of obligation to a lot of things. I had a conversation one time with Yaakov Weinberg. I don't know if you've ever heard of him. He was the Rosh Hashiva of Neri Yisrael in Baltimore for a long time. And his brother was David Weinberg, who you might have heard of. He was Rosh Hashiva Eishet Torah. So Rav Yaakov Weinberg, the Rosh Hashiva of Neri Yisrael, used to give some shiurim in the summertime at Eishet Torah on Hilchos Deos and the Rambam and whatnot. Anyway, he's a very interesting personality, and I happened to be there one summer, so I took advantage, and I went to the classes, and I got to talk to him a little bit. So one time I asked him, what does Judaism say about altruism? In philosophy, it's a major topic, but what about Torah? How does that, I don't hear anybody talking about it in Torah. There's something called chesed, but chesed could even be bad. The Torah itself refers to relations with your sister as chesed, but not a positive chesed, a negative chesed. So chesed apparently is not a moral call. It's simply going above and beyond in terms of giving to someone. But sometimes over too much giving could be negative. So I asked him about altruism, and he said that he thinks that human beings are certainly egocentric by nature. And I believe the line that he said to me was that halavai, a person's selfishness, should be helping other people. You hear that idea? It would be amazing if a person's selfishness would be helping other people. But ultimately, he's motivated by a certain selfishness because it makes him feel good, feel like he's doing the right thing, you know, whatever. So, in any case...
So you're not supposed to, like, do things to make yourself feel good. It's supposed to really be doing it for God.
So, yeah, so the question is, can we ever really achieve that? You know, how much can we achieve that?
But you can do good things.
100%. 100%. That's what he's saying. Halavai, person's selfishness should be to help you to help.
We were having a discussion the other day, like in the shit room. We were having a discussion. Like somebody said something about opening the door for someone who was disabled.
Yeah.
Versus someone.
Sure, giving cover. Yeah.
Like, almost to me, like I just it doesn't matter to me. Like I open up the door because like it's just like I guess it's the way I was raised. But mm-hmm. I open up the door and I don't feel anything. I just do it because it's like. A common decent thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
I think that a lot of people don't do. But anyway, I mean,
that's beautiful.
I feel like I don't feel anything when I do it. Should I do it out of like just because I think it's the right thing to do? And like I just feel like so many people just laugh at me. Like I walked out of the elevator,
and it's probably reflected in the same thing.
I guess I walked out of the elevator the other day, mm-hmm. and like. You know how like you're supposed to let people out first?
Yes.
Yeah. So somebody walks right in and like right. bumps into me.
Yes.
I'm like I turn around to him and I'm like, you let people out first. And he makes like a face at me and laughs. So I'm getting back at him and I was like, wait, like who raised you?
Right. It's a reflection of the same thing. You know, sometimes it's a reflection of society and our values, and sometimes it's an individual that just was raised a certain way, be it this nature or nurture. There's a lot of different factors in it. But I had the same experience the other day. I went into the Wayula to get to my car, and I'm parked in the back, which is the outdoor part, and there's an indoor part. The indoor part is for the people that drive Lexus and Infinities. And the outdoor lot... I don't know, but that's what happens. You see it. It's like a pattern, right? All the higher ups in the, you know, in this place have fancier cars, and they park in the indoor lot.
So the people who are higher up get better parking spots, and they just happen to drive.
Right? Okay, that's fine. So, but I'll tell you what happened. It just goes to show. It's like it's just interesting. So I walked in first. I walked in first, and I went to go to my van outside, and I noticed that I was blocked in. So I came back into the lot to speak to one of the guards that he should move the car. Then another woman walked in, and she's parked on the inside lot. And so she also needed someone to move the car for her. So he decided, for whatever reason, let's not make judgment calls, he's going to help her first. And so I went back to my car to wait. Okay, so I assume by the time he got to me, she's probably long gone. But I wasn't thinking about it, I was just waiting. So then I pull out, and she's still there, but she's not parked anymore. Now she's... parked right in front of the door the exit. There's only one way in or out of the lot. It's that little door. She's parked there. Okay, I'm a patient guy. I figure she probably, you know, is setting up her Bluetooth or, you know, who knows what. You know, okay, I'll give her a minute. She's not going anywhere. So, trying to be nice still, you know. It's flasher. She doesn't seem to notice. So I didn't want to honk because it's rude and it also makes a lot of noise in the garage. So I said, okay, I'm just going to get out of my van and I'll just, you know, go say, you know, I got out of the van. I'm walking next to her window. She's just like munching on food and just like hanging out in her car from what I could tell. And so, are you leaving? Oh, yeah. My wife is like, maybe she was diabetic. Maybe. You know, but this happens in my Simcha Kol Yom. You know, and the question is, how much is it a reflection of society and how much is it an individual and their family and whatever? And that's a good question. But I do think that in terms of trends of the world, that definitely people are way more egocentric, I think, than they ever were before in history. That's what it seems like. You know, the divorce rate, you know, people's relationship to government and how willing they are to just disregard what the government says and anti and protest and all these kinds of things.
There are differences. It is a reflection of society sometimes, especially with the elevator. Or in London, they take their lines very seriously.
And what do you mean? What do you mean the lines?
They're queues. Like a line.
Yeah, you're waiting in line. Cutting line, you mean?
No, just to line up. They have lines that parallel subway cars. And so you wait in line on either side.
Yeah.
Everyone exits. And then one by one, you go in. It's
culturally just something that happens where in America everyone just pushes each other out of the way and forces themselves onto the trains. I hear. It's interesting. So this kind of comment, I'm not bringing it up just to be critical of society and give ourselves mussar, but additionally, it's important as an educator, as parents, as friends, as all the situations that we're in when we're trying to help other people along in one way or another. So we need to understand what's a person's question. Can you answer the question by saying, well, that's an obligation that you have? Or does that not work anymore? When it comes to education, the only way to answer a question is to know what the question is really rooted in, and that helps you be able to, you know, to answer it. You know, sometimes questions can be worded one way, and it just depends on what the person has in mind. The words don't reflect what the question really is. Why should I learn Gemara, Rabbi? Well, you mean why Shulchan Aruch wise, or you mean why? Like, why do I want to? Why should I want to? Make it meaningful to me because I don't think it is. And that's really the question that I think everybody, with rare exception, is asking. Bizman Hazeh, why should I learn Gemara? Meaning I keep it being told I'm supposed to, and in school that seems to be this big goal, but it doesn't make any sense to me because I have limited time and it's not interesting. And at the end of the day, and this I think is the question everybody asks, if the whole point of the Gemara it's just to get to the conclusions anyway. So what's the point in learning it when we already have the conclusions? And until you can answer that question sufficiently, I think this question will always bother you. So that's going to have to be one of our important goals.
Can we think about it? That maybe we know, like something that we do in school that we have the conclusions already, but we go through the process anyway? Yeah.
Go for it. Give me an example.
What do you mean? I'm trying to think. I don't know.
Why do we reproduce experiments?
I'll give you one example. I don't know if you like that one better or not.
Okay.
But maybe that's a better one.
Yeah, well, it's an interesting one.
That definitely is very important. If you, we know it. It's been done a million times. Why should I bother doing it?
Why should I do it again? Well, because maybe a millionth one time I might get it.
Possibility.
Yes. Or it's more to show you the process.
So can you say that reading the discussion is to show you the process and how things work?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course. Yeah, like people don't like that answer.
Okay. But I think
also experiments want to be fun.
So maybe this is better. So what's the point of all these labs if we already know? Mm-hmm. So what is the point of it?
Just answer it.
Okay. So what's your answer?
Show you the process.
And
trust the process.
Well, and how the conclusion.
And at the end of the day, so now I know the process, I see how they came to the conclusions. Well, how's it going to change anything I do from now on?
Because now you have a better
understanding of how we come to conclusions.
Right. It goes to a person's natural curiosity. If you accept everything you're told, then where's your...
Is scientific method very similar to Gemara?
Depends.
Okay. We have
deduction.
We have observations.
The greatest difference is that experimentation is because you don't necessarily know. It's almost opposite directions.
Could we theoretically go through set up a circuit in the room based on what we learned in the Gemara?
No, what I mean to say is the most, I think, you know, help me out here, the most significant difference between the two is that science is working forwards in the
right.
sense that
yeah.
we don't know what the conclusion is going to be.
Right.
We're going to test it out to discover the answer.
Oh,
the Gemara is always working backwards.
Yeah.
We're trying to figure out what the Masorah, the Halakha was. Okay, there are examples of that in Torah also, but what I'm trying to say is that if you want to compare learning Gemara, you're going to have to compare it to a legal system.
Yeah.
So you're almost trying to figure out, well, what was the
yeah.
if you believe in intention, mind,
yeah.
constitution, you know, what was the intention?
Yeah, they both kind of start with an observation, but how they go about it. So, like, I guess Gemara is like, you make an observation, like, let's say a pasuk or something, and like you're like, okay, now, what does that mean? Like, what is the Mishnah mean?
Yeah.
And then you break it down, like, well, where do we know this from? Where do we know this from? But, like, more like science is more, I guess, something happened. So, like, it's not that we're trying to figure out what that means. We're trying to figure out how do we get to it, not figure out what that means.
Right. We're not working back to it. Sometimes you want to determine the laws to figure it out.
Right.
So there must be a law. That's the
yeah.
assumption. But we're trying to experiment to figure it out. Whereas in Gemara, what we're trying to figure out how to categorize it. But it's trying to put it back into something.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's a significant difference.
Could we have built a sukkah based on reading Gemara's sukkah? Could we have had him move the piano out and set up an experimental sukkah?
Yeah, you should be able to derive all of the laws from learning Gemara and be able to do it. Okay, but we would have known that too from the Gemara. That the Gemara discusses.
And then we would take it down. Or bust a hole.
I mean, they too.
Would that be allowed?
You know, the Gemara even points out what's halach l'moshe misinai, things that you won't be able to derive from anything.
Do people
but the Gemara has to list those
things. Or do people build sukkahs based on the Gemara?
So there's a fascinating article written by Rabbi Chaim Soloveitchik, which is Rav Soloveitchik's son. Where he deals with what he refers to, I think he coined this phrase, the mimetic tradition from the word mime.
Mm-hmm.
So he says that was more traditionally the approach, certainly by the less learned, that they basically just mimicked whatever they saw.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a more oral tradition, if you will. And now people are more educated, everyone's more educated, and so everyone has gone more back to sources, and it's changed a lot of the ways that things happen. It's an interesting article, but he discusses that.
I still think we're mimicking somewhere. When we buy our kits...
Everybody does. Depends on the...
Mimicking.
Well, that's like marketed when you buy something that someone
right.
else had put together. But
exactly.
they're the way that those people go about making sure they'll be able to sell it is by getting some POSIC on board
right.
that's going to...
The snapshot has a bunch of signatures on it.
But... You know, I had a case in my shul that's happening basically right now where there are a bunch of people that thought that a certain activity was allowed on Shabbos, and it's pretty clear that's an Isser Derabanan, but there was a whole chevra that understood this together based on something that someone had learned in a shir, probably incorrectly, and they all assumed that this was fine. I don't know that, but I'm definitely trying to educate them, you know, that they should understand that it's not okay. I think he really just liked to play with Legos, I think. Pretty sure. Yeah. So the what I think is the most fundamental question that we have to answer, and we're not going to answer this right away, we'll just come back to it, is what exactly is the purpose of learning Gemara? Are we supposed to know what to do? Or is there a value in learning? Of course, we call this Torah Lishma. But what is Torah Lishma? What is the role of Torah Lishma? Why is that significant? I think most people assume it's just another way of saying that this guy has really good intentions. But it's nothing more than that. And that's incorrect. And we're going to have to come back to it. I don't think, I'm not sure we're going to get to it today, but we should start thinking about it. There are, I suppose you could call them more intellectual types of people that don't like just a mimetic tradition. They don't want to just do things because. They don't want to just follow a Shulchan Aruch and be what they feel is a robot or just doing things because it's tradition. And a lot of people, that really irks them. And those people are going to go back to the sources. And they're going to say, I want to understand this. So that's, for those people, the kind of the question of the Gemara is a lot easier to answer. And I think that's probably what Ari was referring to, you know, especially when it comes to a lot of these experiments and whatnot. Like, I don't necessarily trust a lot of these things that came before. I want to see it for myself. You know, people like that are going to say, you know. But there are a lot of people not like that for different reasons. And a lot of people, when they speak about this, why I learned Gemara, they like to use the term cliff notes. They still have those things. Now they're called something else. Now they have spark notes. In my days, they had cliff notes. But what's wrong with that? So most people think there's nothing wrong with that because at the end of the day, it's all about the grade. It's all about the conclusions. It's all about just getting done what I want to get done. I don't really care what the book was about, how it was written. I'm not interested in literature. I just want to get my grade and get on with my life. So there are some people that are like, but I want to understand it. Like this, you know. So they have their answer already. Those people are going to be drawn to Gemara. You don't really need to convince them very much. But most people are not like that. So for the most people, how do you argue that? So I do want to say one thing. I feel, from my own experience, I've been to two different types of shiurim in Torah. One type of shiur is where I like to call it, I'm looking in a window at Torah. I'm kind of sitting on the outside, and there's a lecturer in the front, and he's taking me on a tour of Torah, which is a fascinating tour. It's almost like being entertained. I'm like watching a movie. And he's taking me through this process, and he talks about this, and he talks about that, you know. But at the end of the day, I'm not a participant. I'm really just witnessing it. And the other shiurim I've been to, which gets everybody very much involved, and they go back to the original sources, and the Rebbe, the teacher, forces everybody to sort of like work forwards. Okay, this is what it says. What are your conclusions based on that? And you feel like you've just been involved in the process. And that's significant, but some people say, I'm not interested in being part of the process. But there are people that when you get that feeling, you say, wow, now I can understand it. Like, I have a sense of where all this is coming from. I want to be part of this. But that depends how tired you are and how much time you have and all the other typical factors.
Isn't there a third one, the purely inspiration?
What do you, oh, that's a shiurim. Yeah, of course, the other shiurim. But I'm saying when it comes to like a Gemara shiur, these are two types of Gemara shiurim that I've encountered a lot.
Few years ago, their general manager started a slogan called "Trust the Process," basically, because he was drafting all these players, and they were really good players, but they were getting injured, and they'd sit out a whole year, and then they come back, and like they've been really good. So one of the players he's been taking the slogan, he's just always been saying it, and like they turned it into like a whole thing. So everywhere in the NBA knows it, like it's called "Trust the Process." Then another team came out and they said something, and they're like, we're not interested in the process, we're interested in the results, or something like that, because like they were doing better or whatever. And it was just it's so funny, like, that you're like, that, like, it's related to this.
So when we make the title, you'll help me out. When we make the title for this year, we'll have to, you know,
trust the process.
I'll have to remember that one.
It's very catchy, it's very funny.
So I will make the following point. I know a lot of people, really good people, and they say to me, I'm not interested in learning Gemara, Rabbi, let's cut to the chase, I just want to know what to do. And what I mean, they're good people, I mean, they really want to know what to do, and you know, they want to follow the halacha. The but is that a lot of times that I've had conversations with these people, because they're not exposed, they don't have the appreciation, they never really learned the Gemara, when you give one of these Gemara arguments to them, they right away dismiss it as, oh, that's a flippant argument. That's a very weak argument. Like, they don't really appreciate the Gemara at all. And Rav Soloveitchik, you see in a lot of his writings, experienced this a lot. Because you see him trying to impress upon people that there's no difference in terms of the rigor between anything scientific, which people were willing to accept as very rigorous, and Talmud. And the assumption, even in his time, and I guess especially Bizman Hazeh, I think because people meet a lot of rabbis, and rabbis are not always very knowledgeable and very necessarily smart, and all you need to be a rabbi is just get a piece of paper, you got like a 60 and a bunch of tests, and like you're a rabbi. So people assume, oh, rabbi is a gzeira shava, right? Rabbi gzeira shava. He's a rabbi. Rabbi's a Talmud, same type of person. Obviously, this guy was capable of being in the Talmud. This guy is more or less a fool. Therefore, all the rabbis in the Talmud were also just no smarter than him, or accurate, or precise, or careful. And I think it's a huge problem. So does that mean that only people that should get smicha are people that are really like on level? So obviously people feel not like that, because then you won't be able to run the millions of shuls, because there has to be a shul 15 minutes away from the next one, because no one wants to walk more than 15 minutes. So anyone have any leadership in Klal Yisrael? So we have a little bit of a catch-22. You really do have a lot of people out there. What? You have a lot of people. I think I have that one somewhere, but I don't think I ever finished it. There are a lot of people out there with the title rabbi that are not necessarily so careful in a lot of ways. So because of that, people that are not exposed to real Gemara learning from a Rebbe that really knows who's done, no? they don't really understand Gemara. Now, what does that lead to? At least the people that want to know what to do, and they really do want to know what to do, but they kind of feel like it's not so precise. It's not so accurate. It's kind of like whatever the rabbi said. So socially, they're going to do it because they don't want to be weird, they don't want to be outcasts, and they kind of stick to it. But the emunas chachamim, in the sense that I'm really serving a Kaddish Baruch Hu, they're not really convinced. And that's a really big problem, and I do see it a lot. So people think that Gemara is just like, you know, whatever, you know, this made the most sense, it sounded like most reasonable to those people that I've had the discussions, and therefore people aren't so committed to halacha, because, you know, there's always another opinion. And in any case, the opinions that they come to and the conclusions are not really so clear anyway. So as long as there's some opinion, it's really fine. And even the opinion, whatever, any of them are probably like, you know, whatever, anyway. Now, if a person really thinks about halacha that way, that's not going to lead to a very healthy Torah lifestyle. You hear what I'm saying, right? Have you experienced this? Do you know what I'm talking about? Not so much.
Possible.
Okay.
People who are interested.
But when you really push them and ask them like questions about Gemara or Halacha, they kind of really feel like the Gemara is very wishy-washy.
Have you ever had the opposite? People who are very interested in the process but don't care about anything like
that? Yeah. They're usually like more philosophical types. They're very academic, and they like to understand, you know, things. But like, you know, they have trouble with the concrete. Okay. They're almost like not interested. Usually their shirts aren't tucked in and like, you know. Perhaps, yeah. There's other issues involved in that too.
I mentioned one of like my best friends too. I don't want to say his name.
Yeah.
Like he's in Rabbi Shalom's year.
Okay.
Like he loves when he comes and because he's intellectual. So like he goes and like I've heard him say like out of his mouth straight to me he's been like, oh today like we've been sucking good tosos and he loves learning, but like at the same time like you know he thinks about it. He doesn't always do the right things, but like he loves learning. He likes to think about things.
So what I'm trying to answer is why learn Gemara. The question of, well, how come if a person's learning Gemara, it doesn't translate into doing it, and what it means integration, and the Yiras Shamayim involved, and how that should have impact his life, that's a separate issue. That's, you know, the Musar aspect, which we did speak about a lot recently, the idea of taking something from the mind to the heart and the definition of Musar, because a lot of people think Musar is learning information about how to behave, and I insisted that that's not true.
The simple song in the Passover,
yeah. There's a lot. There's a famous comment by, I think, the B'nai Yisachar, that when push comes to shove, those people, like when let's say the Crusades and whatnot, or later with the Maranos, I think that's when he was talking about the Maranos, that when push came to shove, the people that were very intellectual and you know, were either killed or converted. And the people, they just had emunah pshuta, and they just, you know, they refused, and they were, you know, they were martyred, or, you know, they weren't killed. No, the people that were so intellectual were willing to give in, because everything was like a thought process. And this makes sense, and so, like, you know, I can always do this, I'm like, yeah. So they converted.
So the simple sound is sometimes more celebrated than the one who...
Yeah.
Simple.
More committed sometimes because of that, yeah.
What do you think is better, to have someone who, like, doesn't even ever think about anything, mm-hmm. Or do you think it's like, or someone who thinks about things and stops and thinks and asks questions because he genuinely cares? He just
that's the
debate. So the thing is that the Torah is really here to change us. It's not supposed to be a person that just does a bunch of behaviors because that's how he was raised. Because it's supposed to change a person. And if a person doesn't think about what he's doing, then it doesn't have that effect on him. Not much, anyway. But a person that is so thinking that he's not willing to accept anything unless it jives with his thought process, that's also that's not good either.
Well, I was going to say that. Just like someone who tries, but he asks questions and he's not always sure, but he just does things because he's trying to do the right thing. But
the ideal is a person...
The
ideal is a person that's committed because he understands and he trusts the Torah and the Chachamim. So he's committed. So he's got it's Na'aseh v'Nishma. He's going to do it because he knows it's the right thing. But he's not without a Nishma. He's still trying to understand, and he wants to understand. But the nuance of understanding is tricky. Because to the extent that a person does things with more motivation because he understands it, it kind of means like he's doing it because of himself. To the extent that a person finds more beauty in it and more meaning in it, which usually meets the motivation, of course. But the idea is that when a person wants to understand mitzvahs more, at the root of it, the ideal is that he's just committed no matter what. But there's more of him invested in it because he understands it more. Not that he's motivated to do it because he doesn't really want to do it unless he understands it. They overlap a lot. But if you can split hairs over there, that's where we want it to go. The idea of Tamei HaMitzvos and understanding things, we want it to be that more of the person should be invested in it, not that he should be therefore more committed to it. So I guess we'll just finish with this point, that the first argument that I want to make, why people should learn Gemara, is even if you insist, which I disagree with, and we'll explain it as we go, even if you insist that really the purpose of Gemara is to get to halacha, which again, I don't think is true, but if you insist, okay, let's assume that we're trying to get to the halacha. Even then, if you want to develop a healthy Torah personality, you've got to learn Gemara at least a little bit to appreciate it, and learning a little bit means you really learn it. And you understand it, and you get the thought process, and you can relate to it, and you really feel that there's a precision there. And until you get to that point, it just works out that a person's commitment to halacha is rather weak because he doesn't really think it's coming from anywhere significant, and it's not precise, it's not accurate, it's not just, you know, the opinion of a bunch of rabbis, you know. So that's argument number one. I don't believe you can have a healthy Torah committed Torah personality, unless a person has some serious exposure to Talmud. But that doesn't lead you to say that a person has to learn it forever or, you know, for anything like that. That argument doesn't go that far. So, you know, we'll have to work more as we go. What are some other arguments that would, you know, push us in a, you know, in a different direction? Which, of course, leads us to a lot of things you were just discussing about finding it meaningful and trying to figure out what's at the root of all of this. But I guess we'll save that as we go right there. At least we got started.
Recommend reading.